Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Michael Adams here, coming to you on the morning after the sad announcement of the passing of Noel Kelly, one of the true greats of rugby league and one of its great characters. So we would like to offer our condolences to the Kelly family and join the rest of the rugby league community in mourning one of its true greats. Member of the NRL Team of the Century, changed the hooking game forever, one of the toughest men to ever play the game, and a very gregarious character. I would recommend his book, Hard Man, written with Ian Head, which is one of the best rugby league books. It's an incredible story told beautifully. So we were going to play our next chapter today. We're going to hold off releasing that until tomorrow. And in its place, we're going to replay the interview we conducted with Noel a couple of years ago. This was recorded on the back deck of his house in Collaroy, overlooking Long Reef Golf Club. It was truly one of the honours of my life to get the opportunity to do that, and I know Andrew feels the same way. So we will throw to that interview now. We'll speak to you tomorrow with the next Super League chapter, but Vale, Noel Kelly.
Does that sound right?
Yeah,
yeah, three kangaroo tours, hooker of the team of the century.
Yeah.
Pretty fair career, Noel.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good career, mate. I've enjoyed it, you know. Been a good ride, really.
I want to go back to your Queensland career.
Yep.
You played in Queensland, I guess, the last great era of Queensland football in the pre-origin era.
Yeah. I was born in Goodna in Queensland. That's halfway between Ipswich and Brisbane. And they never had a senior league in Goodna, so I had to go to Ipswich to play. So I played all my first grade football in Ipswich. And then in 1959, I made the... played in the Bulimba Cup before, but I'd made the Ipswich side and the Queensland side and the Australian side, and then toured to England for 5.5 months at the end of the year. So that 1959, that just turned our whole life around. So I was a butcher and working, you know, two jobs, pumping fuel of a night time at the garage and all, and trying to get on our feet. And then I make the Australian side and we're off and running, you know, but we never had any money and we were stone motherless broke. So we the first offer I got, I took it and come to Sydney.
Before then, one thing I wanted to ask about Queensland, because that was like the last year before the gulf between
yeah.
Sydney comp and the Queensland comps became like
yep.
a bit too great. When you came to Sydney, what was the difference in standard between like playing Bulimba Cup and playing for Wests?
Yeah, well, when I played for Queensland against New South Wales, that was in 19, and we beat New South Wales. That was at a stage where Queensland were on, hang on, New South Wales were on top for ages, and they used to just bash Queensland up and, you know, 53-0 or something and all this stuff.
Is that because they had the Queensland players down here?
Well, that's part of it,
yeah.
That's part of it, but not a real big part of it, because that's when the poker machines came down here, is when the Queenslanders came down to try and get a few bucks, because
right.
there was no money in Queensland, you know. So I went away in 1959, and it was really hard on your wife and our babe, two babies, I think, with one baby at that stage. That 5.5 months away, and we were all away on 11 quid a week, which was absolute peanuts, you know. We were, all we were just workhorses for the league, you know. We're sort of, we're the blokes that dug the well, and I think they're drinking the water now.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, I wanted to ask you this. It's like there's, you actually had to sacrifice your family's well-being to represent the jersey.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And then, I mean, now Mal's got the jersey, yeah, just pride back in it, but there wasn't pride in it for a while.
Nah,
it must have really given you the willies. What
well,
you
that's know. Right, you know, and of course, losing junior league hasn't helped the situation. The league need a good kick up the arse for letting the junior league get in the condition it is. Like, all our players, our rep players, and most of our city players, team players, we're all blokes from the bush, you know, all farmers and bloody people from in the, out in the country. You know. And then the first people that they've neglected, in my book, is those at the school of young people that we had, you know. And besides changing the game around to suit the TV set, but I mean, and they, as you said, we would be out there playing our guts out for nothing, and like, and we'd do it again for nothing, or because we got that much pride and pleasure out of it. But 3 quid a week, only 5.5 months away, you know, pretty tough going. And then I had 3 kangaroo tours, and the second one was about 4 months of four and a half months, and in between that a World Cup. So I was never home, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my wife had the kids. We were getting older. We got more kids, but as she was home doing it on her own, you know. Like, I mean, bloody hard to sit back and think about sometimes.
Does it make you sad that the kangaroo tour is gone?
Oh yeah,
94.
Disgraceful. They're like losing France. Like, France might as well not be playing. And the kangaroo, and the kangaroo jumper has become cheap. Now, before, well, in let's say in the 60s, to become a kangaroo, you had to go to England, and you had to play, and to be a member of the cricket ground, they used to give you you would be given a 12 months or a time as a member for the cricket ground. But you had to play a test on the Sydney cricket ground, and you had to play a test in England. Now, you can go and play New Guinea in Java, and that's a kangaroo trip. You know, like,
absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, every game now is qualified as a test. Now, I mean, there is a difference between a test and a World Cup game too, you know, but it's that's how it is. They've just gone more for the dollar than anything else, and I've spent a few of them too on the way
through. Well, I mean, your autobiography, which we both read and loved.
Oh my god, one of my favourites.
The one?
Your book. Hard Man.
And we have to recommend to our listeners, if you haven't read that, go out and get it. You should better get it on Amazon and in the bookshops. Killer read, amazing story. I mean, what was it like getting picked from the bush to play for Australia? Like, to us, it's so foreign that you can do that from the country. Do you need someone to tip the selectors? Like, I think it was
Dan Dempsey.
Dan Dempsey Senior, was it?
What they'd do, like, but well, that's, see, and they used to have, well, we'll say in Sydney, you'd have the city-country trials, like all the boys from the country would go back and play for the country, and the city sides, and all the city blokes, they'd all play, and they'd play off, right? And then from that would be picked a New South Wales side, and from that you'd be pumped into the test side. Now, if you were lucky enough to be come up just the year of a kangaroo tour, it's a pretty big hop from, like, I was playing in Ipswich, and that was a bush, so it's a pretty big hop from there to Queensland the Sydney Cricket Ground and then to England for 5.5 months, you know.
Absolutely.
But you're so young and so eager and so... I was never ever built to play footy. I'd never ever... I couldn't tell you who won the game last week, let alone 2 years ago. we only ever used to get there and on the riverbank at Goodner and play anyone that wanted to play us, you know. And that was it. And of course, as you get older and you're starting to get a bit better and you're starting to get a bit of a rap put on you, and you know, you start then thinking, well, I might as well give it a go, you know, and see how good I can be. And of course, that's probably what led us into being down here. I'd been to England from Queensland, and then I'd say to my wife, well, we got an offer from New South Wales. Do I think I'm good enough, you know, to go to New South Wales? Well, we'll soon find out. So there were plenty of people who came from Queenslanders who came to New South Wales that went home with a broken heart and their tail between their legs, you know, and from everywhere else too, you know. It's a tough company in Sydney, and it was a bloody sort of tougher in the olden days before they, you know, stopped the old swinging arm and all this stuff.
It's so funny when I read the accounts of the scrums back in the old days. Like, it seemed like you were lucky to escape with all your fingers. That's right.
But see, hookers are great position on the field now, right? But it's probably the best position to play on the ground now, because you handle the ball first every time. You can take your pick which side you go, and, you know, you don't have to rely on anyone. As long as they play the ball right, you're going to have a chance to do something, you know. Well, and of course, Cameron Smith's a great player, and he'd be a great player in the olden days.
Would you say he'd be a halfback back in the old days?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, half or 5'8", yeah, I would. But, see, he wouldn't be quite as good looking. There'd be... you'd have to leave your initials on him somewhere, you know. But he's a great player and a great fellow. So, I mean, that's the prime position. But when no one wanted to play hooker normally, but and not only that, you had to be a bloke who was durable, who could fight. Absolutely, you had to be able to whack a bit and be a bit callous about it, because you're hanging in the scrum with your both arms above your head, right? Now, in the second row opposite you, he's going to have a pot shot at you any time he likes. So you and your mate in the front row, particularly the blind side, and opposite where the ball comes in, you and him have got to be pretty good friends, because he's got to look after you. You're laying down there waiting for the ball, and all of a sudden they're coming through here. He's got to be able to get into them, you know, and at least keep you on your feet until you get going. And I mean, hey, and of course, you're a hooker. Before Ian Walsh and I arrived on the scene, the hooker was just a guy that used to walk from scrum to win the ball. You know, he'd get into dummy half, but you'd never ever run them at all much. They'd just pass the ball, you know. And, well, that's my opinion of it. And then when I could play a bit in the open, and so could Ian Walsh. And we reigned for the 60s, you know. So when the scrum ball would come in the scrum, all the weight goes to one side, because you're just a sitting target for, you know, sometimes a boot pad, you know, anything. But I mean, I had a deal with anyone that whacked me that I'd get them back, you know, and hit me, you're gone, you know. So, and if you do that early days, it makes life easier, I can tell you. You might get sent off a couple of times, but if you've nailed a couple of them, you know, so after that, I always used to say to them, if you can't do anything, just get his number, you know. It's like number four, number nine, number two.
Were there any blokes if like you knew you were playing the next week? Were you like, oh, this is going to be a rough game?
Yeah, they were rough. Yeah, they were rough guys. Some guys couldn't handle pace in the scrums, but it wasn't like that all the time. There was, see, the hooker, he relied on his scrum count. You'll see at the end of the game, Ian Walsh 20 or 8, Ned Kelly 7, or vice versa. You had to win the scrums, or at least get your share. But if you get to be 2-1 2 weeks in a row, you're lucky to make the side next week, you know. But if you're a good forward, they'll put you a prop, you know, and you're a better help to the hooker if you're an ex-hooker, you know.
Yeah.
So when Ian Walsh was favoured as a hooker in latter years, I was in the first trip to England, I was the number one all the time until I broke down the knees and cross as what, you know. So I got back into being number one again for a few years, and then he'd go in and then I'd go back in, and you know, it was just whoever was fit enough to play, really. So then at the end of it all, I find myself playing prop, you know.
Steve Walters was considered, in my era, in Mark's era, the first hooker forward, but you were the first hooker forward.
Yeah, for sure.
We used to hear that all the time. Steve Walters is the first hooker forward.
No, never.
And then we read your book. And
yeah.
Well, it's funny you and Ian Walsh coming up at the same time. Yeah. You know, yeah. I'd imagine great rivals, but it seemed like you were pretty good friends as well.
Yeah, we were good mates. He was, put on Abel, he's not with us anymore, but in the very first interstate game, I was playing for Queensland, he was playing for New South Wales, and I thrashed him. I gave him an awful bash. And our Queensland side beat New South Wales that night in Brisbane, you know, and that's where I got my start. Anyway, I remained the king from there on. I was hanging in there. Anyway, it was funny. Just this bit of a break, and Ian Watson and I didn't use the same. We're about the same size. Anyway, when we'd room together, you know, we'd have our gear hanging up, and whoever got home first was the best dressed. Anyway, we used to look alike a little bit, you know. He was better looking than me, but he just looked a bit. He looked like me a bit. So we're playing Wakefield Trinity one day, and this was always going to have this big mad bus called Don Vines. He had bloody Russell Sprouts for ears, and he had nose because he was an ex-wrestler, and all the things they reckon he was. I don't know what he was. Anyway, every time we played against him, it was on, you know. So I thought, oh Christ, here we go. So Ian Walsh is the hooker and I'm the prop. So the game going on. As the game going on, the referee hates me because I've been playing hooker in the tour before and all this stuff. And the referee hated me. Anyway, he's all the time, get your feet back, Kelly, and stand up, Kelly, keep your arm over the top, Kelly, and all this stuff. And all the time, it wasn't me, it was Ian Walsh. And Abdul's in there, and he said, I'm not Kelly. And the referee's going, and he's at him and going along, and I said, so with that, this Don Vines lets him go, and he whacks Abdul, but he sort of got me a bit too, and I thought, oh, well, Sydney or the bush, so never did anything about it. But the next scrum, I hit him right in the whiskers, you know, knocked him right in the and the linesman come running in and said, it was Kelly. And he goes straight over to Walt. Just get off. And he wants to say to him, Abdul say to him, he said, I'm not Kelly, I'm Walt. I'm not Kelly. That's Kelly. The referee said, get off. And I said, fuck off, Abdul. You're giving me a bad name. never forgot me. He got set off anyway. Oh, shit.
You must have had some fun on these tours,
no? Oh, we did. We used to have some great times, you know. If you weren't in the bloody bus, you were in the train or the something, really, you know.
I mean, it sounds like these tours with the, you know, the meagre rations and you were fighting for a decent feed. Is that true?
Yeah, bloody hell. There was the guys before us and going right back, they really did it tough, you know. One lot had to get jobs to get themselves home, you know. Yeah. But in that book, I think Ian read it, the Kangaroos, the big boy, it's got all that story.
Yeah.
Jesus, a good book anyway. Abdul and I were just we were great friends, but sometimes he used to get the shits. That's good.
Speaking of another great friend of yours, the late great Rex Mossop.
Rex used to have an awful lot of knockers.
We love Rex.
Well, it's funny, because we're of the age where we were growing up, he was like kind of a joke figure.
Yeah.
Just be, you know, like all, you know, bagging him out.
Yeah.
And
all that, yeah.
So that was kind of what I thought of him as a young guy. It's only as I got a bit older and got to, like, think about his career, not only as a player, but changing the game as a broadcaster.
Media, media with careers.
You think about it. Like, people who bag him, they, mind you, he could be a bit aggressive or a bit abrupt or, you know, but he played hundreds of bloody first grade rugby league. He changes. He went to England when England was at its best, hardest years, early 50s, and he plays for Lee over there and played regular member of the team, you know, he was part of the team. He comes back, plays for Australia, comes back and New South Wales, turns to Union. Goes away and bloody lie, what are they, the bloody, what do they call themselves?
Wallabies.
Wallabies. So he plays for the Wallabies.
That's a dirty word in this podcast.
But he's played for that as well. Then he's come back to, what do you call it, to a league again.
Yeah.
Vice captain of the 1959 Kangaroos, and in Paul, he's run his own football show for 25 years.
Pioneer,
and it was a good show. And I was on Controversy Corner.
I wanted to ask you about that. We watch it on YouTube. It's amazing. Talk about authentic opinions. Like that's what's missing with the footy show. That's why it's been canned, because it's all sitting on the fence now.
Yeah.
There's no splinters in the Controversy Corner.
No. Controversy Corner. Come on, and we'd all walk in, and we'd be sitting there like this, and someone would say, well, what are we going to talk about? Most of us would say, I think so-and-so, before we got in there, we'd say, pig's ass, that didn't happen. And then we'd start arguing out there. We'd get inside, and people wanted you to get up, Rex, all the time. You know, like, don't give him any peace. Anyway, yeah, we used to do that a bit to him, you know, get him going. Paris Ashton would be talking about his Viking suit. And old Cole Pierce, the referee, only played like I've never ever seen smile. I've never seen him crack a smile. He's a great referee. He's a great referee. Knew every rule. And bloody could not get him to have a laugh. I think he died not laughing.
Well, can we talk about a bad referee?
Oh, that's Lawler.
Can we talk about Darcy Lawler?
Arsehole.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't read the book, listeners,
he's a scum.
He's involved in attempting to fix the 63 grand final.
In that book, you'll read all about it in my book. And no one that you know will disagree with it. Like all the players, I still talk to players. I've heard blokes telling the story, of what happened, because I'd written in my book, but he'd been through it. Like, he played for St George, this guy. And he was Peter Armstrong's name. I was up in the surf club up at Rainbow Bay one day, and I heard this bloke talking about this, what happened in this grand final when he put his money on the St George, you know. Anyway, he was telling it word for word, you know, and I thought, shit, this bloke, and he was using it as what had happened to him on the field with the Darcy Lawler. And he said, if he calls you your name, you're right. You can go do what you like. He said, but if he calls you your number, he said, you're gone. You know, he's going to ride you all day, or he's back the other mile. It's just
disgusting.
He should have been shot. He should have been shot. Some of us should have shot him.
So Jack Gibson, he had friends in the underworld.
Jack had the biggest SP in New South Wales. Like, he knew where all the money was going.
So, was it a known fact that Lawler had a gambling problem?
Yeah, mate. Look, to my way of thinking, and like, we wouldn't be the only blokes that had known this. I mean, there must have been people on the board of control, or whatever they called it in those days. They would have to know.
It's just, I mean, you don't make many grand finals, do you?
No.
And it must stick in your craw to this day, right?
In the same year, in 1963, in the same year, we won the major final, and we went straight into the, what do you call it? I reckon he had his money on St George that day, but right on the bell, the bloody bell was ringing, and I made a break. Right in front of the member stand, and I gave it to our two halves, and I think Kevin Smythe scored under the post as the bell was ringing, and he had us down 8-6 or something like that, you know, and we were shot birds. We were not going to get out, except I spotted a hole near Elton Rasmus and then got past him and unloaded the ball. That's the reason I know what happened. We scored the draw, and the bloody ground erupted. You know, it was unbelievable. They usually did that to people, but this day we did it to them, and we played better than them all day. And I reckon he had us gone, and he'd done his dough. He had his dough in his pocket until this happened, and then boom, he's gone, and we're knocking off on the bell. So he's doubled up on the grand final.
You've got to wonder about the officialdom of the era when a guy's got that much heat around him.
But don't go into that too much. they still friendly. You're right. You know,
why is it allowed is what I'm getting at. Like, why wasn't he pulled up?
Even
if it's rumour, it's like it's...
Yeah, you know, well, that's anyway. Right. See, what do you say? Who's going to pull him up? Who knows?
I mean, it's kind of like it's done now. The history books say, you know. Yeah. But I wonder if that was obviously the third grand final in a row you guys lost.
Yeah.
That was the end of your challenge to St George.
But they deserve to win the other two.
Mm.
There's no risk of it. They were never in doubt. They were better. There was half of us were unfitting in the first one. And I couldn't walk, let alone run. And then the second year was second time. Yeah, it was. We were a bit better, but not much. But the third year, we were on fire. We were playing good footy, you know, as a team. Been there before, you know. It was good.
Do you think that kind of like broke the spirit of the team in some way, or do you think it was just players getting older, moving on, that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah, just players getting old. Like, there were blokes retiring out of that. Yeah, that was... there were guys retiring down over the hill.
You mentioned your knee there. You had the knee injury early in your career, right?
Oh, yeah, I took it with me to England. Bloody thing.
So, like, I mean, in the modern medicine, it might have been fixed up, but
well,
in those days, you couldn't do
it. I did it in town for playing for South Queensland against North Queensland, I think it was. And that was in about 1958. And...
You had it for the first tour?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, oh, it was murder, you know. Yeah, but used to strap it tight and put the capsule in on it and burn it. Do everything you could, you know. As a matter of fact, they talk about how much football they play now. You think about, in, say, 1959, playing in Queensland, we played all the trials, and there was plenty of them. Queensland, South Queensland played North Queensland, then North Queensland played South Queensland, and then Wide Bay, and then you play all these trials, and then you get into your local limit. Then you go into your club stands, club sides. Right, so you play all your club footy. Then, as you're playing your club footy, they pick the Bulimba Cup. And of all the footy I've played, none of it was harder than Bulimba Cup. Oh, there was Brisbane, Ipswich and Toowoomba. Oh, jeez. That was absolute murder. Yeah. But I'm not kidding, that it was murder. At the grounds were like bloody granite, you know, the terrible grounds.
The Queensland sun baking it.
Well, up on North Ipswich Oval, used to be the big gas works beyond, and you'd be sucking up gas. Oh, jeez. And it was just like one big cricket pitch, you know. But anyway, so you'd play all your trials. And then you'd play your trials into that Bulimba Cup. You play the Bulimba Cup. From the Bulimba Cup, you play three games in that, I think. Maybe four. So anyway, then you get your Queensland sides picked out at South Queensland sides. And you play North Queensland sides. Then you play the Queensland, plays New South Wales. Then you three tests against New Zealand. So when you play the three tests against New Zealand, you get on the plane the next day, and you go to England, and we play 36 games. You're away for 5.5 months. You come home, and the Frenchmen arrive. So you picked in a world game, go through all your trials again, play your comp games, play your Bulimba Cup, play the World Cup, right, on top of your Premiership League, and then after, I think the next year, the Pommies come in. I mean, you think of all the games of footy we played in between, and they're telling me how many they played now.
Yeah.
In 1967, I played 5 games in 7 days in England on tour.
Good
Lord. There were blokes were getting hurt and a couple of them wouldn't play and all this stuff. And I had 5 games in 7 days.
Well, we're going to talk about 67. I mean, we're sitting here with the universally recognised hardest man of the hardest generation in the hardest sport, and you had to discipline a few blokes over there for behaviour.
Oh, yeah, well, we had a couple of blokes that were just, who'll remain nameless, but I mean, they had the wrong idea. You know, when they didn't make the top side, they sort of thought, oh, well, so I'll just have a cook's tour now, you know, and didn't want to play, and drank too much grog, played up in the pubs, and they were a completely different lot than that were out in 1963 and 59. They was a new type of bloke than we were used to, you know. It was hard to handle. It was, but again, it was management that brought it undone. That we were going to get sent home. And, oh, geez. So no one wanted that. So yeah, we did have to discipline one. Yeah. Just, I think I offered him around the back or something. Didn't come down.
And no one accepted your invitation.
Well, it's sort of a thing. It was my third time, and I didn't want to come home, you know, bloody be remembered as one of the blokes who got sent home on the 67 tour.
Absolutely.
I've had two other great tours, you know. So I certainly didn't want anything like that happening. And, you know, and that, I was a bit dirty when I was that bloody wild. I'd let those words out before I... Because in those days, that was a way of fixing things up a bit, you know.
It just made us laugh. It wasn't a team of pussycats, and then and no one accepted your offer.
Yeah, well, there was a couple of one to help, but it was going to give me a hand.
Yeah. Well, while we're on the subject, I mean, Rex Mostov in his book said that I think it was Vince Corrales was the toughest guy he played against.
Yeah, I reckon he would have been. He bashed. Well, he bashed the whole bloody team here one year, Corrales. He ran riot, and he certainly was a big, strong, bloody, hard-running bomb, you know. He didn't take any prisoners.
How about yourself? Did you have a...
Yeah, well, not we didn't stand up and swing, but we had a few, you know, shoving your nose in one another's face.
I wanted to ask about, on the 59 tour, it was kind of Reg Gasnier exploding onto the scene.
Yeah.
You would have played against him for Queensland that year.
Yeah.
Did you know how good he was?
Yeah. Yeah, everybody knew him. Yeah.
What about him, like, made him so good?
He's from zero to 10, he's first. He had this knack, he had a little short burst, but the further he went, the more he sort of stood up and ran, you know. And oh, geez, once he got into stride, he had that little jink that can just jink away from him, you know. Someone else would have to sidestep, and he'd just sort of give that little jink. He was an excellent player.
We keep hearing in the modern game the closest thing to Reg Gasnier is Greg Inglis. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think the only thing, Greg Inglis is a great player, but he doesn't participate for much of the game. You know, I know he does some great things, so that, you know, if you're in there playing, you've got to play 80 minutes. Like, our game was 80 minutes. Oh, you don't have to anymore. That squelches my argument, I suppose. But I mean, if Greg had Gasnier's oomph, like a get up and go, Gasnier wasn't a tough, bashing, what do you call it? You'd compare him to a gentleman, you know, he was clean cut, and when he scored, he was usually just putting it down under the post. Just beautiful to watch, you know. Like, I heard Frank Hyde call him a gazelle one day. He hit the ball, and as soon as he started to throw his head back, he knew he was going to score. And Frank Hyde said, "I don't know what he looks like." He said, "Well, what do you?" But he just looks like one of those big gazelles that throw their arms and legs out. And he did, you know.
Frank Hyde described you in a certain way too, didn't he?
Hey?
Frank Hyde described you in a certain way, didn't he?
Oh, with a cow.
A cow and a bike.
Yeah, that's a bit offensive, isn't it? Try, he said he's gone in and scored a wonderful try. He said, and he looked just like a cow on a bike.
That wasn't your try at Swinton, was it? In
63? Yeah, I think it was.
Because
yeah.
I watched that only recently, and the dummy you did to score that try, it was like Brett Kenny-esque audacity. Going under the post, it was like, was that a feature of your game, or did you?
I could do all that, but mate, it was a positional play when we were playing. Hookers weren't expected to do that. And the hookers get the ball, get the scrum, get everything right in the bloody, you know. That was the engine room. And you didn't have to move yourself out there to get the ball. To, you know, you'd like... There were some times you'd have a game and think, God, strike, might as well stay at home, you know. Like, for all the outstanding things you did, but most of it was grinding away in there, knocking them down when they're coming up the middle and all that stuff, you know. Or setting loose, or everybody, every forward that played for Australia, I reckon, prop, could all run with the ball and jink a little bit and unload the ball. And we learnt that off the Poms. Like the Poms come out here, like Cole McTeague one year, and he used to call it the roll. He'd roll through it. Next one's pop the ball out of him, and blokes run off him anyway. So we used to try and do that. And but mind you, see, today they're getting taught to play when they're 12 or 14, but we were going to work and study. We didn't have time to go to extra bloody training lessons, and all they were busy trying to feed the family, you know.
Different world.
Yeah, different world, mate. Different world. But if these guys here today, not in any way, they're saying they can't play or I'm down on them running, but if they had to push and pull in the scrum, like we used to have to be like bullocks in the scrum, you wouldn't see them diving over here and jumping over there. And here they are, now they can put their hand up and come off when they feel like it, you know what I mean? And they're saying the game's faster. Well, wouldn't it be fast?
Absolutely. Is that something that annoys you, watching the scrums?
Oh, shit, yeah. That's why I hate it. It's just a joke. You're like, in the old game, no one knew who was going to win the ball. So if you're standing back there attacking because you think you're going to win the ball, and they win it, you've got a big job containing this. And that's destroyed the back foot of footy, though. Knowing you're going to get it might be all right, knowing you're going to get it, but the other bloke knows that you're going to get it too, you know. So, I mean, I just think that's a blemish on the game. In rugby union, they don't put the ball in the middle. They have all these bloody stupid scrum rules and all that. But you watch. They walk up to the thing and just roll it straight through the back of the scrum. No one says a word. But you get the gun. You win the ball when you put it in. And that's what... They should tighten their scrums up a bit. Keep them big bastards in there and let them push a bit. Keep them out of the road.
Well, it's a bit hard to lose the scrum when you roll it past the lock's feet.
Oh, well, that's right. What do you do? Yeah. And then he says... A bloke strikes for it or something. Don't strike.
Oh, shit. Amazing career. You started in the height of the unlimited tackles era and you finished in the four tackle era.
Yeah.
That must have been a shock to the system.
Yeah, but you work your way through it, you know. It's there, everyone else is doing it, sort of, you know.
So did the game just snap overnight in this fast-paced...
Yeah, well... Don't forget they had that bloody takeover, that, what do you call it, Super League. Then I think a few rules changed in that, you know.
Become like touch footy almost in the,
it did, yeah,
in the Super League era.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, look, and I reckon the right people are getting the money, the players now are getting the money, but when you consider that when we went away on a big Boeing... British Empire Electra, the biggest plane they had in those days, and we get on that at Mascot, and away we go on the plane, women and kids having all in together. Down the back, smoking was the go in those days. Yeah, down the back, and the booze was all down the back. The plane used to fly like this. Everybody used to go down the back and have a smoke and a can. And you stand there talking to this bloke here, But you can only see him up there. You wouldn't know who you're talking to. Like the rest of it was smoke, you know.
Must be like a nightclub.
Yeah. And then you'd go back up and we'd be playing 500. You just tip your seats right over backwards in those days and sit up on that. You'd turn around and play with the blokes behind you. And you'd play cards all the way. And then, like, and sleep in the bloody 52 flying hours.
Holy Jesus.
Yeah, all over Cairo, anywhere you fucking like, we went there. And it was like the mail run. Oh, but, man, there's horse and dog or something. Anyway, all that, those things, and then we'd be over there about 2 weeks and just about to have our first game, or maybe have just had our first game. In would arrive all the fucking trumps, all the border control, they call it. They'd arrive and they'd stick us out at Eel Creek, 22 miles out of Leeds, on a fucking old farm or something, or pub up on a hill. We'd be out the trout bay. And all the fucking toffs, the bosses, they'd come in, they'd all stay in the Queen's Hotel in the fucking first class, and we'd be fucking out of fucking Never Never.
And who was the manager on your tour? Was it Bill Buckley, was it?
No, he was the president or...
Yeah, the boss of the border control.
Oh, board, right. It was they used to call it the border control, yeah. And then, not president, what was he? He was the gun, anyway. He was the big boy, and then, there were all the, and it used to be all old blokes from each club, like old Latcham Robinson from Balmain, and Frank Facer from St. George, and someone else from down here, someone, and they all scratch one another's back, you know. You couldn't shift them.
Not much changes there, right?
This guy's a fucking goose.
you had Lou Moses at West. What was he like?
Well, luckily, he parted company early days with me. You know, I couldn't get on with him. I couldn't stand him. But he'd be ringing up the papers and then blaming everybody else for ringing up the papers. All that fucking crap, you know, you don't need. No, we weren't getting on too good, old Lou and I.
Well, I mean, we've done a few History Corner segments that Michael's researched about Ilkley, the hotel there. Do you reckon the kangaroo is still a dirty word there? Or
the what?
The hotel at Ilkley.
Oh, shit, no. That old bastard that owned that. Every kangaroo still with me. And what he'd do, he'd go around and buy all this old shit furniture, and it looked anything. It was supposed to be real old stuff.
Like antiques.
Antiques. Supposed to be all antique. Anyway, he'd you'd put your foot up on it like that and the fucking leg is falling. So he was an old pricky. And he got us every year. Anyway, the last year, I think it was 67, we went down the road and stayed down the road. But he was an old codger. He had it all sorted out, what he was going to, what he was doing, what he wasn't. But there was a shit fight. There were fucking rats and really, it was a fucking shocker.
It was like Steptoe and son.
Oh, it was a shocker. But it was a good spot there. Ilkley, we all liked good Ilkley, but we were just so far away from everything. You know, like, we had 26 players locked up in a bloody room, and locked up in a pub that with nothing in it. And what do you do every night? Sit there and talk to another guy and have half a dozen beers or something.
I wonder if they were thinking, we'll keep Johnny Raper away from Leeds.
I think they needed to do that.
He caused enough trouble in Ilkley, didn't he?
He pulled some of the... Oh, he's a genius. Oh, jeez.
I was in Yorkshire last year, and I went on a a self-guided tour of Ilkley in honour of you old blokes, and a very short tour. There's not a lot there.
Nah, there's not. And there was a lot of people there the day we went. I took my wife back and we backtracked and had a look at where we'd been, you know, and we went up into the Buddy Lakes district and the Keswick Hotel. That was all changed and built differently, and millions of people up there. Fucking hell. But they we were pretty lucky that we went at a time where, like, tourism wasn't the biggest thing in the world, like anything like it is now, you know. So, but everywhere we went, there was plenty of people, but nothing like it is now, you know, not packed with people. So I consider us to be pretty lucky, you know, to have tours like that. We're good.
What I don't get was, from the other side, when the Poms were coming out, I saw an article where they were staying in these plush digs in Vaucluse.
Yeah.
It's like, why were they getting looked after, but you blokes weren't?
That now?
No, back then.
Oh, yeah, they were in pretty good pubs, yeah, should you? But ours, stuff were, when we went to England, they were putting us in bloody old joints, were full now. France were full now. We had to burn a wardrobe one night to stop freezing.
Incredible stories.
Oh, Jesus.
Just one person I wanted to ask about was your coach for Queensland in 59 and subsequently on the Kangaroo Tour, Clive Churchill. What was he like as a coach?
Yeah, he was pretty good at keeping blokes together. But I've got to tell you, they were a pretty honourable lot of blokes that I was away with. Particularly the first two, they all knew what we were there for. It was sort of drilled in to us all, you know. Everybody used to say, oh, then you'll know what you're doing, you're playing them bloody Poms over there and all this stuff. And he used to keep that guard up a bit, you know. Like when you're playing 36 games, it might sound a lot that you've got 26 players, but when you're playing three games a week and stuff like that. And I mean, you're losing a couple of players all the time. So there's blokes backing up all the time, or getting yourself ready to go back. I used to spend half the time between, I had a crook back even then, and I used to keep the poor bastard up rubbing me back half the night, you know, then get back out and end on it again the next day.
And I guess if you're out for 4 weeks on the tour, suddenly Ian Walsh is playing every game and
yeah, well, that's right, that's how it happens, yeah.
What was the difference between 59 and 63? Like, pretty good teams in both occasions, but what got you over the line the second time?
The fact that the 59ers, the blokes that have been there, 59 have been there before. There was no shock to it. Like, coming from Australia to England, there were blokes like Ed May who'd never come from Ipswich to Sydney, you know, so you didn't know what to expect, or, you know, you're standing there, oh, this is a dog, having a look at it. Then it's only about 3 weeks later and you're saying, no, I'm not a fucking complete. Oh, not another old bridge, you know. All this stuff.
How about the grounds? Like, you went from the rock-hard Queensland grounds to these soggy mud tracks.
Used to kill us.
Yeah.
Our legs for the first couple of games, first couple of weeks, would be bloody awful. You know, you tried on the ground, some of them were bloody, but now they're bloody beautiful.
What about the communal baths?
Oh yeah, they're good. A lot of fun.
I mean, how weird is that?
It's the
weirdest thing in the world.
You never got in with them. I only got in with them. Everybody used to try and get over near the line when the bell rang. And they'd be in their corner in the I'm playing with their big dollies. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, no. All the blokes that had big slugs, they all got in and walked around. All those fucking blokes with Tom Thumbs. Oh, <yeah.
laughs> do you still go to the reunions?
Yeah.
Do you still put them on?
Yeah.
I'd imagine they'd be a bit of fun.
Mate, I've got to tell you that. the Kangaroos reunions, the Kangaroo lost his way here for a few years. You know, like the Kangaroos reunion, if we didn't have, 20, I reckon there'd be 20 Aussies or 25 Aussies, 20 Kiwis and 20 Poms here. You know, like, that's how it was. And that was only the Kiwis and the Poms that were keeping the Kangaroos reunion going. But Mal's arrived on the scene and he's said, oh, this is no good, blah, blah, blah. So he's pissed the Kiwis and the, what do you call it, he's pissed them off. And we get to sit down with the current Australian side. But we went and had this one the other day. There's only Pedic, and there was only, say, 40 Kangaroos there. And he sits the team up the front, and us down the back. Instead of fucking putting... And this is in the dining room, and they used to have... In the new, we went to the, before this, a new noble stand in the cricket ground. So we got looked after and pushed in there and, well, how good is this? It's a bit better than fucking climbing around in all the shit after the game, which we used to do. So anyway, we go to this one the other day and they got us back in the cricket ground, in the member stand, which suits me fine. And it was just back to the bad old days, you know. We got these blokes who think the game's just started this year, or, you know, Australia's playing their first game ever, you know, they don't want to know anyone. That was the feeling I got. But there's a heap of them who wanted to come and sit amongst the Kangaroos, you know, because a lot of those guys... You know, they've read the books, followed the footy. What's his name from Penrith, the prop?
Reagan Campbell Gillard.
Yeah, yeah, he come and saw me for a bloody hour.
Oh, what a legend.
He was just sitting there, yeah.
He seems like a really good bloke, yeah.
Yeah, and he came right out, didn't I mind him coming to sit down here, mate.
Well, I would think that all of them would be pleased to meet Hooker of the Century. I would think that all of them should be pleased to meet the Hooker of the Century.
Oh, they wouldn't even know, mate. It's just another event, money making, event, I reckon.
Do you think the game, like, is responsible for that? Do you think the powers that be do enough to look after?
Mal's trying. Yeah. He's trying to get that going. There's a lot of them think that the game didn't start until in early 90s, late 80s. Yeah.
Well, at club level, obviously, your club doesn't exist as it once did. Yeah. What's your relationship with the West Tigers?
I go over there often. They invite me to... Mind you, I'm about their only... Well, there's Peter Dolman and I, and not too many... blokes on their feet that have oldies, you know, or Kangaroos or left in their ranks, because they haven't had the chance to provide any more since they turfed them out of the club, you know, out of the league. And I mean, that hurt more than anything that's ever happened. That I still carry a grudge on that. And we were, you know, say what you like, whether we're fucking good ones or bad ones, we're internationals of a very high level, you know. I'd played 3 Kangaroo tours and fucking a couple of 100 games and all that stuff, and then I've got nothing to look back on, you know. I miss West, you know, and I just we go over to the turnouts and they got something going, they put me in there. Old Kelly's here tonight and blah, 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 you know, and I represent them, you know, still. So, but I mean, not in any football way anymore. Like, it's all cricket club or something. Well,
the thing about it is, if the joint venture had to go ahead due to financial concerns and it had to happen, it should have went the other way. Balmain should have went to West, because Balmain is now superfluous.
Well,
and West is the biggest area of the whole city.
See, Balmain, that's right. Balmain.
It's AFL area now.
Yeah.
Joke.
Balmain fucking had the wrong attitude. They arrived on the scene and they thought it was a takeover. And you must admit, they fucking took over. There was Benny Elias running around the fucking place. Big, bloody, what's his name? Zero. All them players. You couldn't. The old West players never got an invitation to a game of anyone, you know. And when you did get one, when you got there, there were fucking 25 Balmain people there. You know, what a fucking joke. Anyway, I hated it. I just couldn't bring myself to support I guess 1 year, I really, actually it was the year they won. But I just couldn't fucking cop what's been handed out to us, you know. I reckon it's just, there's other clubs that should have got the bullet long before West, you know. They're sitting there with two clubs, fully financial clubs, and all the biggest area for kids out there you've ever seen.
Well, here's the problem. If Balmain goes bust, which is, I think, the next in line to go...
They're gone.
And then what happens to Campbelltown?
Yeah.
So, sad.
But the other thing is, like, West have been completely, like, left out of the picture. But even on the Balmain side, anytime something happens, they go to these same five blokes from the 80s, as if Balmain's history started then.
That's
as well.
That's exactly right, yeah. Oh, it gives me the shit.
You live near Manly, it couldn't be worse.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, they had their chance too with North.
Yeah.
The funny part about that, North were the foundation club, and I mean, they chucked North. Although, it's got to be said, they didn't have a junior league much up there, and the parking and all that stuff. But their club's $1 million, it keeps going and going. This mob have lost the fucking club, the joint across the road, all the car park, they used to own all. Own it. How right, the lot. Well, Arco's full of pockets, and away he's going.
Well, one thing I loved about your book, like, you were, this was at the height of the Super League war, and you were very critical about all that was going on the Murdoch side, but you were one of the few old timers that was actually saying, but hang on, I'm not in the ARL's pocket here either. There's some issues there.
Hey, got issues, all right. But all right. I think on the bad side of it is how they've let the junior league go. I reckon that's a fucking disgrace.
Well, there's lip service this budget that they're going to be putting money back into. We'll see if that actually happens, eh?
Yeah. So, that's right too. But I mean, when you do things like that, you can't take the grassroots or the basics out of things, can you? Like, I mean, with East sure got the arts.
Yeah, I agree. South can cover that area.
They still can't draw a crowd. They got the bloody best training ground in the joint. And honestly, some of the time they say, oh, there's 14,000 there. There's 4,000 there. Keep showing you the same little square of people.
Just to hopefully finish on a positive note, I wonder if there is any players playing today or maybe in the last 30 years or so that you would have liked to play with or against. Is there anyone that stands out?
Oh, yeah, mate. I reckon the players today would be, they'd be just the same as the players of yesterday. Yeah. I mean, you could never compare it for the fact that they've been trained since they were bloody 10, 11 or 12 or 14. We were still fucking working, you know, to get ahead. I used to work at, I had three jobs. I was a bouncer at the Narrabeen pub. And this is purely because we had no money. I was a bouncer at the Narrabeen pub. I was a butcher in the course house in Manly. and I drove the fucking ghost train and the knock'em down stalls on the Manly fucking pier.
I read that in your book. How did you get that book? How'd you get that job?
Because one of the blokes at the butcher shop worked there too.
Right.
So he got me a job.
Awesome.
Yeah. How many kids would have ridden that ghost train not knowing that like Ned Kelly was there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Anyway, we used to have our trouble with those little bars.
I forgot to ask you something. We'll probably cut this and splice it back in, but when you went to Ayr,
yeah,
and you had to play for five clubs.
Yeah, yeah. But I didn't have to play with anyone in the green force.
So the deal was you went to one club, and when you got there, they said, they've all chipped in for your fee.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He said, I went up, and I was having trouble with my leg too. Anyway, he says, like, I think his name was Dave Tosh. Anyway, he said that they'd like to offer me 800 quid a house and a job. I said, oh, yeah, I'm getting fuck all in Ipswich, you know, and I just come back off the, what do you call it, the kangaroo tour. And the funny part about it is that I'd just been away on the kangaroo tour, and people think that because you've been out on the kangaroo tour, you're going to be a great coach, you know, which isn't always the case, you know. You might be a bit better than the average bloke, but you mightn't be any bloody good at it, you know. Anyway, I get this thing. All right, eh? So Chris was Judy was just about to be born, so, and I had to go up, and it was a fucking raid. Never stop raining. Drops of rain that big, I'm not kidding. If you got it, we're a knockout. Anyway, I was going up in this little Morris Minor ute. Little utility I had. I'm going along, it was fucking there floating off the road. Anyway, I get there and meet this Dave Tosh, and she takes me around to the house. And, oh, Jesus. Here we go. It's a cane farms and all that, you know, cane farms. So he said, now, we'd like to have a meeting with you. The five secretaries would like to have a meeting with you. I said, what do you want five secretaries for? He said, well, what happens is here, he says, each club chips in a bit for the 800. He said, fucking five is as cheap as for 800. Anyway, must be pretty wealthy clubs. So he says, we want to have a talk about your injuries and all that. And I said, oh, but no way. He said, well, what's it got to do with the five companies? He said, well, they all chip in and make sure that you get paid and all that. So, oh, that's good. And then to repay them, you play with a different club every week. I said, what? He said, you play with a different club every week. I said, oh, okay. Said, what about in the grand final? I said, you don't have to play the grand final. You know, how the fuck else could you work it out? So anyway, that all settles down, and I play. And then one week I'll be playing against Hornets. They're all good blokes. One of them died one day while I was playing with him. So anyway,
on the field?
Oh, yeah.
Bloody hell.
I dug him out of bed in the morning. Andy Kyle was his name. And he's pissed on you. Anyway, it's pretty hot up in Ayr. 94 mile this sort of thing. Townsville. So anyway, I go and dig him out of bed. Tell him he's got to play. Come on, Andy, you've got to get up and play, mate. I need you. Oh, bro. So I'm fucking bro, come on. So away. I said, I'll see you at the game, Andy. Yeah, I'll be there. So I get down to the thing, get down to the ground and park my car. We get on the field, the game's going, and old Andy's running like fucking petrol tanks top right up. He's going for it. Anyway, you can see the old gauge going down like this. Like a next one, Andy's going down. And he's turned looking up nearly white. And I went, fuck me. It doesn't look too good to me. And that's something. Someone else runs on, they get someone else runs on. Runs on, they say, someone says, he's dead. And
I said,
oh, fuck the hell. So they race over and get Dave Tyson on it. And I said, hey, Dave, he's sitting up in this little grandstand. Hey, Dave. And I said, he's dead. He said, he's what? He's dead. And everyone in the joints went, oh, fuck the hell.
Jesus Christ. Yeah,
so anyway, says he's dead, so get that one. And they come in and Dave said, do you think I should stop the game? They were great people, but Jesus, they were pretty naive. But oh, we had a great time. We used to shoot kangaroos of a night and catch crabs. Crabs by the thousand.
Is it true that they whacked the transfer fee on you like they were?
Yeah, they won that money, mate. They won that.
That's a bit cheeky, isn't it?
Yeah, I couldn't work it out. I said, it's just a case of one of the smart bastards there. He's probably sure we'll get money back for him going to.
So it almost cost you your Sydney career.
Probably nearly did.
Bit of push and pull there for a while.
Yeah, there was a bit. I wasn't involved either. I don't think it was too serious, to be honest.
It made me laugh.
I think the papers got a hold of it and ran around on
it. Just last thing, we don't want to hold you up too much, but just thought maybe to finish up, you could just give us your opinions on a few of your contemporaries.
Right.
One bloke I wanted to ask about, Norm Provan.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of like held up in this, like, comes across this really classy guy. One of the greats, unquestionably.
Yeah.
But
he
seems this like kind of above it all. Like, he doesn't seem to have that same kind of hard edge of some of the forwards at the time, but I mean, surely he must have been able to mix it with the best of them.
He mixed it with everybody. He was such a big bugger. And great knowledge of the game. Great. Sticks Brown was. He was married to a Sheila that he never had a drink or a smoke or anything. And she used to. They ended up getting divorced too later in life. And I reckon she stuffed him up. She used to say, come on, Norman, we're going now. Oh, Norman, come on, darling. Up he'd get in. I think he's that sort of bloke that just keep the peace, you know. But great player, great player, great bloke, great businessman. But pleasure to know him, you know, he's a lovely man.
The other side of that, famous photo and statue, captain and
Artie Summons.
Artie Summons, what was he like?
Oh, Artie's a fantastic bloke. Fantastic bloke. Artie wasn't the greatest rugby league player going around, you know. That photo was the best thing that's ever happened to Artie, you know. He'd tell you that. He's sitting here, he knows it too. I fucking tell him off. And he says, he's pet version, if you ask him about me, he reckons, I said to him one day, you're fucking hopeless, you know. Anyway, we're playing in the game, and in league, you have to cheat the ball. You can't just chuck a fucking ball to be on the other bloke's feet. So every time we played, Artie was halfback, I was like, oh, you go, plonk, let's go and win it. I'd be kicking him and bash him and trying to get the fucking ball. But Artie just couldn't feed the scrum, you know. One day, he's coming, he's put it in, it's come out the wrong way again. And I've come out in the scrum and I've said, you are the worst fucking halfback I've ever played with. My fucking love. Anyway, we're having a few beers one day. There's quite a few people there, and he said, well, you know my introduction to them, and say, my first game, he said, he told me I was the worst. Oh, jeez. He just sounds funny coming out of his mouth, that's all it. Yeah.
It's great that he's always supporting the game, and he goes to all the
he's great.
I love that.
Great family. We get there. Great people, you know. They're just great people.
Who was the best player you played with or against?
There was a few of them. Well, you could never... You could never pick one, you know. Like, I mean... Now, for Ipswich Front Row, we bashed up New South Wales with them, we bashed up New Zealand, and then we went away in the Kangaroo Tour, the three of us.
Was that Dad Beattie
and Gary Parcell? Yeah. So those guys. Because they didn't play in Sydney, you miss out a lot of press. You know, you're probably reading it up there, but not as much as down here. Like, I mean, they push in. You know. If they were playing down here, they'd be in every website, you know. There's no doubt in my mind. But, I mean, when you're talking about great players, sadly enough, Chang's the old version of Billy. I think Billy's as good as I've ever seen.
Really?
Billy, yeah. And I think you've got to throw Chang in there. But I hate him. But he's him and I don't get on. But he's just a pig. But he's a fucking great player. So the less said about him, the better anyway. Mm. But, Kenny Thornett, Leslie Johnson, and Ken Irvine. They still haven't broke his record, I don't know.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Playing with a club like North, running last every year. He's leading the points.
Incredible.
And try score.
Imagine what he was like if he played for St. George.
Oh, mate. They're talking about that bloke scoring 6 the other night or something.
Mm.
He would have scored 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on, mate.
Well, one of the great stories in your book was the Irvine v. Brian Bevan lineup.
Where you said...
that's the two legends of the wings facing off.
Yeah.
Old and young.
Yeah, that's right. He said... There's a story there. He had Brian Carlson that used to play for Australia, but Kangaroo in 59. Great player. He'd been there in 52. Youngest something or other ever. Great player. He's as good a player as I've ever seen. Anyway, he said Kenny Irvine was only 18 when he went away the first time, and they had that big fucking... What's that big black winger's name?
Billy Boston.
Billy Boston. Billy Boston runs out on the field. This is Steve McCarthy's version of it. He says, look, it outruns Billy Boston. And he said, just over on the other side, he said, it's Kenny Irvine. Out like this, he said. So he stays playing fullback. And Irvine turned around and he says, hey, stay. And he says, what do you want? Mongo, he called him. What do you want, Mongo? He says, what are we going to do when this big bastard runs at me? He said, bend down and pick up a handful of shit. He said, where am I going to get a handful of shit around here at this time of the fucking night? And he said, when he starts fucking running at you, there'll be plenty.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And Stafford Castle was the funniest bastard. He's...
Last question. Your book's called Hard Man.
Yeah.
Who's the hardest man you ever faced?
Well, plenty of them around here. Like, I never had a lot of trouble with anybody in those days. I think what they are one for one treatment. If they see when you're a hooker and you got your arms up over your head and someone pots you, you know, you can get their number. You don't worry about how you get him back later on, you know. And you do that a couple of times and you risk being called a fucking king eater artist or something, but the blokes can never eat you again, you know. So I had this rule, you know, I'd let one go. You'll fucking pay for that, mate. Give it to them sooner or later. And it sort of stuck with me right all the way along, you know, that don't get into the country. If they're talking, I'll say, don't bash the bastard, he'll bash you back, you know, so, and he's good at it. So, that in mind, you know, and there were also other aspects of it. I reckon a lot of hard blokes, and I'm not saying I was hard, that's just a word that was put on me in the Bulimba Cup game. But that, I think you find that most real hard blokes respect one another more than, like, we had two blokes here, Spud Carroll and what's his name from Newcastle?
Harrigan.
Now those two ran into one another like 2 foot mad bulls, you know. Like, I mean, I could no sooner do that than fly in the air. Like, it hurts too much, you know. I mean, I can't remember anyone else doing those sort of like running in and really head on one another.
I'm from Newcastle, so I was at the game live as a kid.
Could you understand?
I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
I've never seen.
They ran from 50 metres out.
two of those big bulls, they got them big horns. Hear the bang a mile away. Two nice blokes, two good blokes. But I would say if that's what you call
Well, then we've read every book there is to read in rugby league, and there's so many of the toughest men. Toughest man, yeah. So there's something to be proud of.
Kevin Ryan was a tough bloke. Kevin Ryan's big, one of those raw bone bloody blokes that no matter where you tackled him with, one part of his bone would hurt you. You know, like them bloody Fijians, like they seem to be all elbows. Well, Kevin was like that, you know. But I never had any trouble with him, and he never had any trouble with me either, I'll tell you. But there was there's a few Poms with madmen, but they'd put a madman in over there to bash you, but he couldn't play.
Yeah, right.
You know, so
doesn't really count, does it?
No.
If you're a madman and you can't play.
And they did that a couple of times. There's a couple of blokes called Shaw over there. They know, fucking loonies.
Well, the trick was to put them in the game before the test, wasn't it? On one of the tour matches to
bash let them soft up, yeah. They put a bloke called Frank Foster. A bloke came to me one day and he said, "Hey, Ned." And I said, "I used to drink with us a bit after a game." He's Pommy. And he says, "Hey, lad, they've put Frank in to look after you." And I said, "Frank who?" I hadn't even read the paper. And there's this Bristol fucking headed, ginger looking black called Frank Foster. And anyway, about quarter of an hour after the start, he's come in with a late tackle. And I don't know, "Oh, it's my friend fucking Frank, you know, he's going to get me." So he fucking half got me with a side on thing later. But he fucking made the mistake of picking up the ball and fucking running in my direction. And I hit him with the
forearm.
I can still feel it. It's like hitting a fucking good one wood, you know. Frank, anticipated. Didn't participate much. He had his feet hanging over the sort of the trolley. So it's like a wielding ball.
Oh my god.
If you do that a few times, you fucking get a bit of respect around the trolley. It's when the people jump away from you when you're getting on the bus.
Well, I want to finish on this. What was the feeling about being named in the team of the century? It's great sport.
Pretty good, yeah. Pretty good. It was. Everybody comes and says, you know, you're a big chance in this, you know. And my wife and I are pretty casual about all them sort of things. If it happens, it happens. We're sitting in there, I was as pissed as a noodle guy was sitting at the table, and I was sitting back. Okay. Drinking red wine for about 4 hours. And he written me note, comes out. I'm more worried about getting up. But I was. I was getting, anyway, we were there. That was the main thing, isn't it?
That team is just spine tingling.
It's a great team.
In that team.
Great team.
Illustrious company.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And yeah, so, I mean, for that reason, meanwhile, it's been such a thrill for us to talk to you today, Noel, and
thanks,
really
mate.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Lovely. Cheers. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.